Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 15 with brothers Aidan and Ray Carroll from County Offaly in Ireland. Although they're only 31 and 34 respectively, their breeding program has enjoyed tremendous success in recent times, particularly last weekend, where two of their homebred horses, both carrying their CBI prefix, came first and second in the six-year-old final at the RDS National Equestrian Championships. I have to start off by asking you about last Sunday. And for those listening, especially those outside of Ireland who may not have been tuned in, Aidan and Ray were the breeders of both the first and second place horses in the six-year-old final at the RDS National Equestrian Championships, which in essence is the revised version of the Dublin Horse Show, or the COVID version of this year's Dublin Horse Show. So in first place was CBI Belladonna with Vincent Byrne, and in second place was CBI Kahari with Shane Goggins. But lads, will you just describe the emotions after a result like that, and what does a result and a day like this mean to both of you?
That's a really good question. It was an incredible feeling, to be honest. I suppose with COVID and stuff, neither of us kind of entertained the idea of going, but it would have been a very special occasion to be there. But to see, I was lucky enough to see the live stream. And when you see any of your horses on a start list, especially in the RDS, it's really exciting anyway. And then you're suppose you move on into the feeling. God, imagine if one of them got placed in a competition like that. Wouldn't there be some day out? And then you're looking at a jump off, and the next thing, two of them that we've bred are in the jump off.
Yeah.
And then you start kind of getting maybe a notion. God, I wonder if we get a top five for.
Yeah.
And then I suppose, looking at the lineup of riders and stuff that was in the competition, you're saying, God, there's a few fair speed merchants there, so if you can get in among them, great. But I suppose as breeders we've been lucky. A lot of the horses have gone to good homes for production. So Shane Goggins is that horse since he was young, since he started the horse, so he's done incredible work with Kahari. And then Vincent Byrne has Belladonna. Belladonna is an interesting one. She was sold as a foal to Sweden. And then she was bought back in it from an auction by the girl that has it.
Kelly Sullivan. Yeah.
So she's a well-travelled mare already.
Yeah.
She's a six-year-old. So, in fairness, Aidan spoke to him at the Breeders' Classic last year, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
He was confident, yeah.
He was quite confident in her ability. Even at that time, he said she had something along the lines of, she hasn't it all put together right now, but when she does, it could be very good. And hence, last Sunday, winner.
Yeah, so. But then, yeah, I suppose just going back to Kahari, then he jumped a super round against the clock, and you're kind of starting to get very excited, and you're like, God, this horse is going to take beating today.
Yeah, even in the first round, I think he was up a couple of seconds. So inside, you're like, this could be the day.
Yeah.
This could be the moment you're waiting for.
Because obviously, I suppose, as breeders and that, you always have a notion of maybe winning something significant someday, that's the purpose, I suppose, or the goal. But it was really a dream come true, to see it happen.
Yeah, cause Ray actually was the one who let me know that Kahari had progressed. I had forgotten completely about the jumping. To be honest, we were
in Dunstores.
Dunstores shopping, myself and Orla and the gang. And Ray texted me and said, CBI Kahari through to the finals, so in Dunstores I was losing coverage, so there's an escalator to the second level, and when I went up there I was getting coverage, so in between pushing the trolley down the aisles I was up the escalator trying to see what else was qualified, what was the times like, and then I think it was a 10 got through to the jump off.
Yeah, 10, yeah.
10 like that. And at that point I thought it was all over, done and dusted after the first round. I don't know what got into my head. So I had this little dance in Ross Gray. I said, winner, And Belladonna, of course, was only in the placings at the time. So then I went, ran out and rang Dad. I said, we're after winning Dublin, we're after winning Dublin. And he's like, is the second round over? I was like, no, damn it. I had to go back in, watch the phone for another little while. But it's just, it's on a different level, the excitement. Like, when you put all the thoughts into a cross, and then you know yourself how hard it is to get that cross on the ground next year, and then hope it goes to the right place, hope it progresses in the right way, and then just to get to a final like that and get some sort of a result. Like Ray said earlier, we've been delighted with a placing, but to come first and second, it's surreal.
Yeah, it was such an incredible thing to witness. Like as the other horses jumped off after Kahari, and you know, you're like, God, he's still winning. Like, he's still winning this.
Yeah, his time is very good. Like,
right, the last horse.
You know, and in fairness, there was one or two very good horses, and I think one knocked the last fence just, and he had the time beaten. And I was like, God, he's still in the lead. And then it kind of came that the only horse could beat him was another one we bred. And I was like, God, this is insane. Like, we're going to win anyway, or be second.
And even at that moment, I said, right, Vincent, nice clear round here now, and a nice placing, and that'll do.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he wins. I jumped up and down the aisles in Ross Gray. I'd say the teller thought I was mad. She was looking at me out from under her glasses. She was just like, what's wrong with that lad? Do you know?
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable week.
And I think what was brilliant for a result like that was to see how genuinely delighted other breeders and other people in the industry were for ye. I think that was special. Like, it created a buzz. Obviously, the likes of Dennis Gallagher as the owner, he was delighted. Absolutely, but he seemed as delighted for ye as he was for himself as the owner. You know, Niall Hughes is over. Like, we were all discussing this. Like, there was genuine delight. Because anyone that's involved in breeding knows, like what you said, how hard it is to get them on the ground, keep them safe, get them that far. But then to have the first and second horse, like, to win anything in Dublin is tough. Massive. It's a big day for anybody.
It is, yeah.
But to get first and second, like, even the chances of two from the same age group getting into that situation, like, as you said, like, even having two in the top 10 when they got into the jump off, like, that would have been enough for anybody.
It was class. It was class even to get that far. But that's actually nice to hear. I suppose I've been getting a lot of messages all week, and so has Aidan. Like,
yeah.
A lot of goodwill, you know, and people, you know, people we have to maybe chat in a while and stuff, texting and stuff. And I suppose that's due to kind of COVID. You're not getting out and about to the shows, and you're not getting to see many people at sales because it's all a bit restricted. But no, I suppose, look, it's a big community, and you know, it's nice to have that kind of sense of connection with people in terms of goodwill and good wishes. And, like, you know, like, you hit the nail on the head there. Every breeder, like, has bad days, like, you know, and obviously last Sunday is just an incredible day for us, but, like, you know, you have to take the good with the bad, and I suppose everyone can resonate with that. Like, each breeder has their own story to tell, and we're all striving for the good days, and we kind of try and put the bad days when they happen in the back of our minds as quick as possible, because I suppose if you focus too much on them,
you won't do anything.
You mightn't do anything, you know.
You could just very easy pack it in.
You have to kind of keep the shoulder to the wheel then, you know, when the thing is going, so.
And what's amazing is, on that point, you know, trying to get them on the ground and keep them safe, I think any of us hope that there's probably, in a given year, maybe you'll be lucky enough to have one horse that goes on out of a full crop and be successful.
Absolutely,
but
in
2015, when they were born, going by the IHR online, and for the international listeners, it's the online version of the Irish Horse Register, they were 7 horses that year registered with your CBI prefix. So you'd think to have 2 of those to go on and to make it in their age category is good going. But what I was impressed with is, out of those 7, 6 are outperforming. The one that isn't is breeding. So it's not like life-threatening injuries or something dies or something.
It's
CBI Aldo with Caroline Powell. Belladonna, who won the 6-year-olds. CBI Ice Queen is the one that's breeding.
That's right,
in Mayo.
She's a nice mare.
CBI Kahari came second in Dublin. CBI Kylemore's Cornet is jumping with James Connors Smith out of Senate. CBI McGregor is jumping with Bridget Skelton in Great Britain, and then CBI Promised Land, or Monbeg Heartbeat as it's called now, is eventing in England with Imogen Murray or Murray.
That's right, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
There were a good bunch of foes.
That was a good year.
I mean, in hindsight, when we think back, that was a very good crop of foes we bred that year.
I suppose that was kind of around the time we kind of moved towards maybe a bit more selection in terms of mares and stuff, you know. And I suppose when you actually kind of think about it that way, I didn't realise that there was six. I actually couldn't find McGregor. So that's really good, actually, that you found him. He was a very good foal. Very good foal.
He's doing the Fox Hunters at the moment with them, with Bridget Skelton. I don't know if she's anything to Nick now. I haven't dug that far yet.
No, but that's really good to hear.
Well, no, it's good to hear he's out, yeah.
But
that's always a positive, you know.
Good, that's super.
But going back to the very beginning, you have a farming background, but what was your initial introduction to horses, I guess, first? But then what kick-started the breeding side for you in horses?
I suppose when we were younger, like that, Dad was always into farming and stuff. But he kind of always loved horses and stuff. So he himself tried a bit of breeding, and it didn't really go so well for him. So he didn't have a very positive experience. So I suppose then he was buying kind of younger stock and stuff, and he used to be trying to produce them with different riders. And me and Aidan kind of were going to shows as youngsters then. So we always kind of, I suppose, an interest in the idea of, say, buying foals, bringing them into maybe three or four, and then selling them or get them to a rider, you know. So that would be the initial introduction to it. But then, I suppose, when I done my leaving cert and that and went off to college, I started researching horses a bit more and just kind of got interested in pedigrees and stuff. So then we started buying we got the idea that we'd like to maybe have a performance colt or something. So we had a go at buying colt foals for a while. I suppose a couple of them went on fairly okay in different spheres, but none of them really kind of sustained it as a stallion, you know, which was the goal. And then I suppose at that stage we were buying a good few foals at sales and auctions, weren't we?
We were, yeah. Even though when we'd go out to buy it was primarily colts, there was always the element of, with the nice filly, if she didn't make the grade or an injury stalled her career, of course she had a second pass, she could go breeding. Now, we didn't jump on it straight away because, just like what Ray said, our father had a very bad experience with one breeding mare, and he was at the time completely against it.
Yeah, he wasn't fond of the idea of it at all.
Didn't want it. Lads, don't do it. No, nothing but heartbreak.
No, he's the kind of the main driver of the thing. He keeps the show on the road.
In fairness, he does. Me and Ray, as you know, Michael, we're both working, and
he does a lot of the foaling, and he does all the foaling and a lot of the driving, the studs and stud runs and stuff. So without him, we wouldn't be breathing at all, really. You know, we'd be breathing on paper in dreamland, but to actually do the physical side of it and stuff, we'd help him load, or, you know, we'd go as much as we can, but obviously then two of us have young families as well, and we're lucky with supportive wives.
Very lucky, that way,
so my wife Trudy is very supportive, and Aidan's wife Orla's the same, so it's good in that regard. But
it's probably nice for Tom as well, for your dad, that because he had such a challenging initial introduction to breeding, it's probably nice for him now to get to enjoy it through ye and with ye, and to see the good days of a breeding program as well.
Yeah, well, he was, you know, last Sunday, like, he was so happy last Sunday, do you know?
Yeah, it was like in all Ireland per se.
Yeah,
I'm sure Dublin is our.
Yeah,
our
Like we'd be following hurling down here and stuff, and we're watching the hurling at home, but just we're more excited about winning the class in Dublin than looking at the match. You know, it was just meant so much. But I suppose so kind of after the kind of we had a go, you know, producing a few youngsters and that, and kind of came about, I suppose, we had a few fillies left and they were supposed to go into competition and stuff, and we kind of
the last
we kind of had enough of it. We didn't really
the last it. Actually, interesting fact, the last batch of colts or potential sport horses we actually bought CSF Lulu on that batch, and she's the mother of Belladonna. So
yeah, and I suppose
we broke that batch of colts and sold some of them and castrated some of them and that, but they just it wasn't pain, to call a spade, it wasn't pain. So we had a serious chat one day, yeah. and we said, like, we're given these good prices, could we try get these yeah. prices and instead?
I suppose, like, I mean, some of it did come about, like, I suppose we bought a foal off Shane and Patrick Connolly, and we got to know the boys then over a couple of years. We bought a few more foals and stuff, and then we're seeing, like, you know, what they were doing, so we're kind of saying, could we do the same maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Because we wanted to stay kind of involved in horses in some way, but you don't want to be kind of left with kind of a loss at the end of each kind of youngster you produce. So I suppose then the fillies that were kind of we had left that were supposed to go into competition, we put them in foal. So there was a couple, I suppose actually the two fillies, the mother of Belladonna and the mother of Kahari, the idea was they would go jumping, but they ended up the breeding mare. So I suppose lucky for us that they did, you know.
Yeah.
They did, yeah.
You know, we might never have bred the horses last Sunday if it had been a different story to be competing. Because, like, I suppose they were both well-related mares in their own right too, though. You know, and that was something I suppose we became aware of as well.
Yeah, well, especially when you had started doing the research on families and pedigrees.
We had a couple of mares. Say, I mean, like, we would have had a couple of mares, and they were fairly well-related. Like, you mean in... say in terms of like normal, like for a normal breeder starting out, you'd be quite happy to have mm-hmm. them. One was she was a Bonnie Prince mare, maybe. Oh, her full brother won the Dublin 4-year-old one time, so you know she had a bit to her. And then we had another mare from a reasonably good family as well. The dam's brother won, or was placed actually in a 6 or 7 year old in Dublin. So, like, you know, you're going with something on paper as opposed to starting kind of in the dark.
And another mare, her brother had represented Ireland in Lanarkin.
In and around what year were your first homebred foals hitting the ground here?
I suppose we bred three the first year.
Bred.
They would be 13, 10, 12 or 13 years ago, I suppose. It was 13 years ago they were put in foal.
Yeah, to be around, 12, I think, was our first. Yeah, batch of homebred foals.
See, you were around 18, 20.
Would have been, yeah.
So, yeah, 17, 18 I was, so Ray was around 20, 21, yeah. So we started breeding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost looked it up, though, just out of interest, but yeah. I suppose, breeding at the beginning then, a lot of the foals we were breeding, we were keeping to produce as well. So that's, so we weren't selling them as foals, so that's kind of... So we ran into a big number of foals, as kind of youngsters as well.
Yeah, we had a lot of horses on the hands. Like, we had, I think, what was it, maybe 7 or 8 breeding mares, and we were buying foals as well and keeping our own foals.
Yeah, we could have won 40 or 50
horses.
40 or 50
horses
at
one stage. Yeah.
So we kind of we
all with individual dreams for each one.
We had a plan. But I suppose we had a definitive plan, like, so that's kind of what forced us to reassess. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so
I suppose lucky enough, like, we seem to be moving in the right direction now. Like, we have about, I suppose each year we go between anywhere from 5 to 10 foals, mm-hmm. you know. So this year we've 8, but we try and be fairly selective, like, but we wouldn't be afraid to use young horses. We'd always consider an interest in young stallion, like, and you know, I suppose we've had some success with some of the progeny so far. The main aim, I suppose, we have is to breed a correct individual that moves well, looks well, you know, and try and get them to good homes. Then that's the holy grail, I suppose, for any breeder. You know, you want to, if you can get, like, we're very lucky now. We've a few people supporting us there the last couple of years, buying foals and stuff, and
return customers. Do you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
I suppose the 7-year-old has been a flagship horse for as well, CBIE Keatonstown Victory,
yeah.
with Fitzpatrick's and Kilkenny. You know, they think a lot of that horse, and they bought some more foals out of the mare as well. So, like, that's you know, it gives you confidence then in what you're doing.
Definitely.
I suppose that was a big move for us buying the Senate, actually.
Yeah, Senate at that time. Yeah,
she
actually, Michael, to be fair, was the game changer.
You know,
for us in terms of breeding and being more selective, and,
you know, in fairness,
yeah, that she just took it up a notch.
She just raised the bar, you know. It's
yeah, it kind of coincided, like, the upturn in our breeding
It did, like, she just raised the standard tenfold, I think.
Yeah, it's true.
Just over the last 10 or 12 years in terms of establishing your breeding program, like, what have been the greatest challenges?
I suppose in terms of breeding, you're kind of always fighting an uphill battle, I suppose, in terms of finance. And like, there's stallions you'd love to use, but affordability and, you know, practicality and stuff is a big thing. Like, we'd generally try and be kind of to use pregnancy deals and stuff, do you know?
Yeah.
We've tried a few frozen straws there in the last couple of years, but kind of mixed success, you know. We've some very nice folds from them, and then some of them just didn't work. So that you have to take the good with the bad in that regard. But I suppose finding nice mares was a kind of a, like, mares you really like, you know. We like kind of a reasonably good looking mare, you know, especially now that we're trying to bring them out to the sales and stuff. So you want kind of a mare that'll be noticed when she hits the ground. And then a page, like, the way things are moving, say, in European circles, like, the top families are making top money, but yeah, obviously to buy into one of those, it's a very expensive investment. So you'd be kind of looking for maybe something that's emerging, or something we think, you know, in a couple of years there could be a few more horses off the line, you know. So
yeah,
I suppose with some of the mares we have, we've been lucky, like, from the time we bought them, or even bought them as foals or older mares, they have kind of had performers appear in the family, which always, you know, makes them more desirable then as well. So, but that's a bit of a luck thing as well, you know, because
you can't influence that.
You can't predict that, like, yeah, you know. And like, all the guys producing know how hard it is to keep horses sound and stuff. So you could have maybe potential ones waiting in the wings, and then we'd never get to the jumping field, unfortunately, do you know. But
just on that, actually, you'd often, like, buy and sell good few mares, different breeders would come to you looking for mares.
Yeah,
and you've covered kind of what you look for, but are there any non-negotiables that you just won't accept in a mare, or what are the things that turn you off a mare?
For a lot of people, pedigree is priority, but I think with me and Ray, if she doesn't look good in front of us, pedigree doesn't stand up, because we've seen plenty of mares from all over the world now at this stage, and just reading their page did make your heart beat and your eyes water, and you want them, and then you get the picture or you get the video and you're like, if I put that up myself, someone should beat me, like, to be really blunt about it.
Yeah, to call you on it, like, but
like, we do sell a lot of mares, as you just mentioned, but we'd never buy a mare ourselves that we weren't happy to have if she wasn't sold immediately.
It's an interesting question, because, like, I suppose people have often rang me and asked me, why do I sell mares and stuff, and it's because I can't keep them all. I love mares, and I'm always looking, and you'd see different interests and pedigrees and stuff, and sometimes you buy them maybe when you shouldn't buy them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have to sell maybe one to make room for that one. So it's like, the idea, I suppose, behind what we're doing as well is, like, to stay actively involved in breeding, we need to try and keep the money turning over to pay the bills. And, you know, you'd obviously like to make some money some years, but, like, that doesn't happen, unfortunately.
Not every year.
As I'm sure, hopefully not the people listening will resonate with that, like, because there's lots of pitfalls. But I suppose we've been lucky. We've met some actually really, really nice people from around the country, and I suppose just chatting them and getting to know them, they're after the same things ourselves. Like, the overall idea is to try and improve breeding in Ireland. So the more kind of desirable mares that are around, the more selection there is for people in terms of foals and stuff. So I suppose we kind of have a motto, like, everything's for sale at price, like, so. You know,
Except Senate. Just need to throw that in there.
I had to have
a stern word with Ray about this before.
That's why it's important to interview the two of you at the same time, so that one of you doesn't get in trouble with the other one here.
Like, Ray and me had a discussion about this before.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah,
he's like, if people ask about her, which most of the time they do, and
she's generally
Ray goes, oh, she'll be, if she's for sale, she'll be a big price. And I said to Ray, what are you going to do today? Someone says, well, okay, name it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, know? Yeah, you can only say that for so long, I suppose.
And actually,
but then you see, kind of, when you say to people, you know, everything's for sale, you know, that's, you don't want to say she's not for sale either, but then he just said it, I suppose.
You'd rather not sell her.
But I know, like, it's nice there now. We're lucky enough, last year we got a good lot of mares in foal, and we sold 5 or 6, and people all had nice foals. A few of them now have qualified for different sales, so good feedback from people, and you know, they're happy.
It's nice to see continued success.
Do you know,
even they might not be in our hands anymore, but
like you'd love to have enough ground and stuff to keep them, but then you're into a lot of work, like, so.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It's to keep it manageable as well for ourselves. Keep it really interesting hobby, I suppose. Do you know?
And from what I've seen in the few years that I've known you, the two of you seem to work very well together, and I think it's sometimes quite challenging for brothers maybe to work together and to get on well. But what I'm wondering, do you feel that you have similar strengths and weaknesses, or in your breeding endeavours or your involvement with horses, do you kind of take up very different roles or play very different roles in what you do here?
Well, like, I suppose as individuals, we have our own ideas and ideals. We do have some heated discussions over certain stallions. We don't like the same stallions, like, not all of them. But I'd say about 80% of the time, if we don't agree on a stallion or a mare, that's it, they're out.
And the other 20%, who wins?
It can vary. It can vary, really and truly. Like, Ray could say to me, right, we'll give him a go. And if it's not a success, or in our opinion it's not a success, you have to admit defeat and say, you were right, Ray, or you were right, Aidan.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with so many stallions available and so many options, like, there's always a chance if you really want to. And I even heard Ray telling a guy lately, who was expressing he'd love to use X and he'd love to use Y and he'd love to use Z. Well, do. Go for it.
Yeah.
Do you know, use X this year and maybe use Z next year and Y the year after.
1 year and one cover.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, hopefully, and have lots of luck and your mare will stay safe and sound. And do you know, but you can get pigeonholed into, like, you can kind of confuse yourself in one breeding season. Because obviously, like, there is a huge choice.
There's a massive choice now.
In fairness, there's even a lot of good stallions coming to Ireland stand now. Like, so that's even, I suppose, it's making breeding kind of more accessible for everyone now.
Yeah, absolutely.
The semen is available, or, I mean, in fairness, a lot of the studs will take in your mare and do the job for you. So that's really encouraging, you know. But yeah, because people often kind of maybe call and say, what stallions are you looking at and what do you think of this? And, you know, in fairness, there's very little you can say wrong about any stallion, because, like, I mean, most stallions are really well bred now. Most of them are from good families. They've passed the performance test, or they're approved in some stud book, you know. And like, until you see them in the flesh, you can't really say, God, I don't like whatever about them. You know, you're not going to make a comment about, like, a stallion unless you see them. But the question you kind of raise with people then is, well, I suppose, what's your mare like, and what do you want to improve with her? Like, and does she need to move a bit better? Does she need to look better? Does she need to be taller? Does she, you know? And they're all things that, I suppose, you've seen the mares there. Even there's no exact type we have. They're all different. But, you know, in discussing the stallions we put in each one, hopefully you can see kind of what we were trying to do with the stallions, or when you get time to kind of think about it a bit more. And that's kind of what we do, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
And obviously it's the hardest job is to be critical of your own horse. No one wants to kind of admit there's something that needs improving, but, you know, I suppose realistically there's not too many horses you see that are perfect.
It's very easy book a trend. It's very easy see what other people are doing or other people are raving about and jump on that ship and sail. But you need to be able to say, well, hold on now. Like, he wasn't my first choice, and I really wanted to use whatever the stallion is. I think you need to be brave enough to do it. Bull sales, as you know yourself, Michael, they've got so commercial now. I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but everybody's running to a particular sire, and he's topping every sale, and he's making the big bucks, and everybody wants his semen, and it's gone over the top, in my opinion. How many years will it be until we'll see his daughters or his sons, and they're just starting to be considered castaways? Do you know? I have a small fear that the overall gene pool around Europe is going to become smaller and smaller and smaller all the time, because everybody's booking the same trend instead of diversifying. That's where I like to think outside the box, if you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see maybe a stallion with a different pedigree, or maybe an older pedigree with some new blood in it, and an explorer. Like, not all those stallions won't always get the chance that maybe a son of a top 10 sire would get.
Yeah, like, I suppose even this evening here we saw foals by stallions that are dead, we saw foals by stallions that are now at the top of the game, and we saw ones that are only starting starting their career as well.
Yeah, do you know, so
it's quite a mix.
Yeah, so that's what we kind of try and do, like, in terms of matching the mares, and just kind of so try and do something a little bit different as well, you know, because
we used Quell Hom, mm-hmm. the Hoos, obviously we're delighted with that decision too, because in my opinion he had a good Olympics, but
yeah.
We liked him before that anyway. I liked how he was bred. I liked him as a jumper. I think he's a phenomenal jumper, even if he did never win to the Olympics. He's just, well, we've two very nice quotes off him this year. But when I used Quell Hom and I told some people last year, I kind of got some blank stares. I said, why would you do such a thing? But now people can see why.
Yeah, the last 12 plus months have played out well. Like,
yeah, it has played out well, but even if he hadn't made the moves he made this year and got to the Olympics and whatnot, I'm still happy we used him for the horse he is, and his genealogy is just...
And for what you got.
Of course,
yeah,
of course.
Round.
Two nice calls, you know.
Over the last decade or so, has there been any standout piece of advice that you got from anyone in the horse world? And it can either be that it was such good advice, or it was such horrendous advice and you're glad, either you're glad you didn't take it, or you took it and you wish you hadn't taken it.
Well, for me personally, one very good a bit of advice we received, and it's very true now, is in this game you need to surround yourself with very good people. It's so important.
Yeah.
And it stands true. That's one bit of good advice that I can, and I will in the future try offer people if I'm ever asked. It's so important to have a good network of people around you.
Yeah.
There's been lots of different advice that we were given and we didn't follow, thankfully.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's the great thing. It's the great thing about breeding and the great thing about meeting people. Everyone has their own opinion and everyone has their own ideas, and that's what makes breeding great, like, you know. And sometimes the mad ideas you hear to work, but they mightn't necessarily work for us, you know. But I don't think... I'm just trying to think, is there one, say, standout piece that comes to mind, but it's not coming to me now. But
I suppose one thing that's springing to my mind is a guy in our yard one time. He was adamant we were wasting our time, because I think most of our mares at the moment are career brood mares, and I know this is a big debate everywhere.
Yes,
at
yes,
the moment
Facebook groups,
yes, but
people that have too much time in their
hands. We were to listen to that man on that occasion, everything would have been gone the next day, and we'd have probably broke ourselves trying to get these wonderful 140, 150 mares or whatever people are after. But I'm glad we didn't follow that advice.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. Yeah,
I'm not saying breeding from a sport mare is not the. I'm not saying anything against it. It's just, it's not everything. You know.
And I think the point about surrounding yourself with the good people, you're very lucky, obviously, that you have each other and you have your dad, Tom, as well. But, and even, I suppose, outside of that, it's the importance of, be that in an official group like you were in during the knowledge transfer program, or even a more loose, like having kind of connections that you touch in with throughout the industry, like breeding can be a very tough and lonely pursuit, but it is important to have those trusted few people that you can, you know, you can say, especially if a breeder is operating by themselves, you know, you're lucky that if one person is going kind of way off the path, the other one won't be too long before they'll pull them in.
Yeah.
Whereas for a lot of breeders that are maybe doing it by themselves, if they're not overly involved in the sector, it can sometimes be hard to know where to go for the advice. But it is, be it officially or unofficially, to have that network where you can bounce an idea off, check a stallion. Like even I was messaging a breeder that we all know today before I came here, and he was saying like he'd often touch base with you, or particularly you, Ray, because he would have met you at the stallion show.
Okay.
At the Tuggenbosch. And for him, it's great to be able to like touch base, or, you know, what do you think of this horse, or what do you think of that? And I think it's important that we all
It's like, I mean, I suppose that was one good thing about the knowledge transfer. Like, we got to meet some, you know, good like-minded breeders, and you know, even to have the chats and the conversations, and just to kind of reassures you sometimes you're on the right track yourself, or, you know, kind of, because like everyone wants the same thing. They want to breed a good foal that'll go on and do good things. And I suppose that can be in any sphere, really. Like that was another nice thing about the knowledge transfer. Like, we got to encounter breeders who were involved with the Connemara's and drafts as well. So like, for us, it opened up just, you know, a different thought process. And like, you know, it leaves you open to more opinions. I mean, because obviously that's not what we're aiming to do, but the methods and stuff they used, and how to produce their animals for showing and sales and stuff, was something that we took a lot from as well, you know. Because I suppose at the beginning we would have always been getting someone to turn out foals and do that for us, whereas now we try and do it ourselves, you know. And like, it's great to be able to turn them out, and someone's like, God, they look well, you know.
Yeah.
Jeez, I did that myself at home this morning, you know. And it just, it shows you're taking pride in what you're bringing out as well. Like, you're kind of trying to bring out, I suppose, a product. Like, you know, you kind of want to be seen having a good foal. Take pride in the foal, you know. Because, like, I mean, you spend the money to buy the fee, you spend the money to pay the vet, producing them, hope from the born alive, and then, like, to see the kind of, I wanted it, like, obviously not the finished product, but for us, we're trying to get them into sales and stuff, and it's nice to see them on the final show day, like when people are going to get the chance to buy them, and you kind of go, God, people like the foal, you know.
Yeah,
it's great.
The part.
You know, and it's kind of, it's very, you kind of, it's, I suppose, a sense of pride in, like, you're bringing out a kind of a nice product, you know, and that's something that I get kind of good satisfaction from.
Yeah.
And as well, like, I suppose the two of us kind of, we probably don't do it enough, but we just try and sit down and pick stallions and stuff, but then that's when you can go down the rabbit hole, isn't it?
It's, yeah, like, it's very easy to get lost.
So, yeah, it's just, I suppose that's, yeah, it's something we'll be working on from year to year, like, kind of try and get things in place quicker. But then, like, this year we had a list of stallions, and if someone saw it, to what some of the mayors have been involved, to be kind of saying, you know, but then you kind of have to work with what the mayors are doing as well. They're not machines.
That's it, the mayors don't read the list.
No, and like, I mean,
that is for sure.
At the end of the day, like, they're the most important aspect, because without them, we don't breed. So,
yeah,
we mind them the best we can, and we
cover.
We do our best to get them in foal, and if they don't want to go, they're just not going to go. So,
over these past few years, there's a good few mayors have passed through your hands. Ones you bought. Ones you bought and have kept, and ones you've bought and sold for. But, and I know you'd regularly be keeping your eye out on what's available. For each of you, what's the mare that got away? What's the mare that you came very close to buying and didn't, and wish she had?
Wow, that's a great question. This could take a few minutes now. There's been a few.
Yeah, I suppose like that. It's a good question, but it's also there's mirrors you kind of we would have inquired about and stuff, and then some of them are just very expensive.
Yeah,
and like I suppose they're not the ones that got away; they're the ones we couldn't afford.
Yeah, I think I suppose in this instance, yeah. It's probably what's most relevant is the ones you were in a position to buy, and for some reason,
yeah.
Just didn't pull the trigger, and
but
you would love to, now own.
I suppose for us,
one that's springing to my mind that we inquired about. I can't remember. No, I don't think she was actually for sale. Was the mother of a horse called Dulf van de Vishop?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Secret Love Wonderland? Is she a Libro H mare?
Yeah, we actually
we inquired about her.
We emailed about her and we just simply told she wasn't for sale.
Yeah, that was one that springs to mind. And
yeah, I think
just on the from what progeny she has produced, she's
You mentioned the uses there a while ago. I think actually Andrew and I have mare from the line. Or, very good family. I mean, she's produced some super horses. And in fairness to Jolfi, I think he's going to be top stallion. Like, but depending on numbers of mares, he's got some very good performers from
small numbers.
So, yeah, actually, she was a good example.
There was one at the time when we were deciding whether we would buy Senate or not. There was a Ray will probably tell you now in a second. There was a For Pleasure mare available in Ford the Cornet as well. Cornet. I think.
She was, she
was she a sister of Valiant?
Valiant and Hello Forever.
Okay.
Or Hello, Hello Forever. He was prominent at the time,
and it was a toss of a coin between those two. Of our choice was obviously Senate.
Yeah,
but she had the other mare has produced quite well.
I think yeah,
as she, well.
She pops. I think she's a stallion son and stuff.
She has, yeah.
She was a nice mare too. Actually,
she was a nice mare. Probably what a lot of guys dream of. She was a lovely black mare, big black mare. You know. But I'm happy with the decision we made.
Well, that's it, and she served you well in a short few years. I suppose keeping on the topic of the mares, and it's a question I've asked some other breeders, and I think considering the amount of mares ye research or you've had, I think it's a particularly relevant one to ye, and I want you can ideally pick one different mare each. If you could add any living mare in the world to your breeding program, who would it be and why? And you can pick any mare that's currently out jumping or one that's always been breeding, but should be bought just for the purpose of adding to your breeding program. And you don't have to pay for her.
Wow.
Wow. Could send a lorry, I think. There's a few... I think for me, I'm so bad with pronunciations, but she's a full sister of Emerald. She's the black mare. Is it
Diamantina?
That I just have. I'm mad about her. I think she's everything about her. Not just because she's Emerald's sister. She's my pick. Straight to you, Michael. That's my pick. She'd be right in there beside the main lady.
Solid pick.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know, for a man that spent so long thinking about mares, right?
You could, like...
That's the thing, there's so many and...
You could say 10 more, like, there's, sure, like, Belladonna, or not our Belladonna, but the Belladonna. She was a phenomenal mare.
Yeah.
Fit for Fun. There's so many. Was it Flora the Mariposa?
Flora the Mariposa. She was exceptional. Yeah.
Very good.
You really have me, because I'm trying to think of all the different families, different lines.
Yeah, or even if there was, is there a mare that you think, I'd love to have a filly from her in our breeding program. Is that, if maybe that's an easier way of putting it?
Is there a, correct me if I'm wrong, is it a, the mare called, is it Beat Me? Is she the mother of Darry Lou?
Yeah.
I think I'd like that family.
Or is she Venus? Beat Me might be the sister. I always get mixed up between Venus and Beat Me. But I like that family.
That's actually, the family of Darry Lou.
We're looking at that there back long, actually. That's very, very good.
A filly from that family. I like it.
Another I was looking at there was...
Well, if Danny Dunn or Bertel are listening, I can't pronounce your surname, Bertel, but if they're listening, maybe they'll sort you out someday with a nice full sister to Darry Lou.
No problem.
You may get saved, I think. Huh?
We can offer lots of grass anyway.
Yeah, no, that's a good line. And then Hello Milady actually was one I like as well.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah.
Scott Brash's mare.
Doing very good things.
Seems to be some nice youngsters coming out of that line as well. Just because I suppose that's a good breeder. He's a good breeder in Belgium.
Yeah, Yaris.
Yeah. Sorry, very good family. And there's loads, in fairness. Like, I mean, you do look, I mean, when you go looking at any of the popular ones like Queerly Chen and Rusacker and all them.
Another line I like myself is, I can never remember which is the mother and which is the daughter offhand, but is it As Cold as Ice?
Or yeah.
That line interests me a lot.
Okay.
I think, you know, there could be some serious potential found there with correct crosses. Not saying that they're not doing it right now, but you'd have your own ideas of what you'd like to try, and I think you could make something happen there, yeah.
They're always for sale in Zangersay Auctions, aren't
I know
they?
That.
To make big money.
The unfortunate timing of the sales, they're always before our sales, so.
But they might give you credit.
Maybe. Buy them with a promise.
What one thing would you like to change about either your breeding program or your farm in general? Is there something that you'd like to change, develop, add? Is there one thing that you think this change or this step would take us up a notch on what we're doing?
I suppose, like, we've been working with, say, very limited infrastructure. You know, we have fields and we've access to ground and stuff, but just in terms of a nice kind of maybe housing facility for the mares for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to winter a lot of them out, you know, but say the older ones and stuff like that, we bring them in, but That'd be a big addition for us. And then I suppose, like, we have access to arenas, but to actually have our own arena now would be the next sort of move, you know, just for even for showing foals and, you know, for people coming to visit. And that's nice to see them loose in an arena, you know.
Even to make a video for somebody, you know, just to be able to turn them out. I'd be the same as Ray. Infrastructure would be a big step for us.
Yeah, and it's something, even when you go around the country looking at foals or looking at horses, it is one of the biggest maybe challenges or shortcomings. Is there's lots of people with lots of nice foals or young horses, but it's that frustration that you're chasing them around a field trying to get a video and
one corner to the other.
Whereas it is nice to have somewhere we could pull up in a yard, and regardless of the weather, you're fit to show them.
So just say, because I suppose from visit, like, you know yourself, even from visiting anywhere in, say, Belgium, Holland, France, like, I mean, the hobby breeders over there, like, they have fantastic places to show their young stock, you know.
Yeah.
Again, they might have the grass any of the Irish breeders have, but they have these really nice facilities. So I suppose it's something that would be really welcome, you know, if it was.
And that's, I suppose, with the few of us that are involved in the Zinequine farming task force.
Yeah, no, you're doing great work pioneering that, yeah.
That's one of the things that we just feel would be such a game changer. Like, in all the other sectors, if you're involved in beef, sheep, dairy, tillage, you can get all this grant assistance to improve
it's
your
incredible,
facilities.
It's incredible, really, like,
be it animal, you know, animal housing or safety or whatever. So hopefully we can get it for horses.
Especially
when you
think about the production units that are in Ireland, like, for youngsters, like, and you've got, like, the RDS and you've got Mill Street and you've got the, I suppose in recent years, the Breeders Classic, like, they're all incredible showcases for young stock, and for us as breeders, like, to have young stock in them is super. But like, we're producing some of the best young horses in the world now, and obviously the best eventing horses for years, and then we've obviously got some of the best riders in the world. So like, I think it's definitely something that is worth fighting for. Like, what,
yeah,
you know, like, to put it on a level playing field, like, it's definitely contributing more to the economy than a lot of the industries that are being supported, you know.
And even if we think of the few breeders that we know that have either have a nice arena for the youngsters, especially the few that have even a small indoor, that regardless of any day of the week, day, night, whatever the weather is, like, even say some of your earlier fillies were bought from Shane and Patrick Connolly.
Oh, yeah, they're,
like, they're indoor that they have. Yeah. I remember bringing a group to Connolly's during the knowledge transfer program. We brought the Galway group there, and they were just talking about, they're showing us the indoor. Yeah,
super, super.
And
great.
I had asked Shane, like, you know, how long until you think, how long would you need to take until you could have this paid for? And I think his answer at the time was, it already did, because it allowed them to make more sales than they would have if they didn't have it, and it was paid off very, very quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be a game changer. Similar question to the mares now, and especially this, maybe it could be an interesting one, considering, you know, you'd run a decent number of mares at any one time, and how you were saying about, you know, you're trying to pick the stallions that, you know, you can afford, and you have to use some young ones and some proven ones and that. But if you could have unlimited free coverings to any living stallion in the world, who would it be and why?
So there's a three or four that popped into my head anyway.
Yeah, I'm the same. My mind's blown with that question, actually.
And hopefully, if there's any stallion owners listening to it, hopefully they'll grant you that wish.
I'm sure it's pretty obvious with some of my answers, but I think I'd go with Di Montesimli. Just, I love him as a broodmare sire. Just, we've had a number of them now at this stage, and they're just, Di Montesimli for me.
Okay.
Like, I could name out 10 others, but that's not what it's about. You want one.
Yeah.
So he's the one.
Yeah, I suppose I was thinking, like, Emerald. Do you know, it's maybe a very obvious one, but, and we haven't ever used him.
No, we've never used Emerald ourselves.
We'll get there eventually, but I just think he's very popular in the sell well, and like, I mean, some of the horses by him are phenomenal. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I suppose if you were lucky to cross the right mare with him, and get, you know, you could breed a potential like world superstar. You know, that's I think maybe when we look back in years to come, you do wonder, will he be the superstar? He potentially could be. But then I suppose like Cornet would be another
Cornet,
guy.
Yeah.
But then it's just hard to pick. Like,
it is. It's.
I mean,
it's
you
so
look at your chairs.
Like, you go down through the list that you create in your own head, and you write down 10 times. Like, there's such a vast selection available now.
Yeah. And of the younger stallions, because you're constantly tracking.
Yeah,
everything. It's rare that there's a stallion that moves without you having an eye on him. Of all, say, the ones on the younger side or the less famous ones, are there any of those younger stallions that you haven't used yet that you think that one's really, really interesting, but just for some reason you haven't got around to use them yet?
There's a couple. I suppose the reason they haven't been used yet is because of the commercial element as selling bowls in Ireland. Again, it's going to hit off another topic, of course, you know, following the trend. But again, I'm useless with names. He is an Aska Z son. He's called Amadeo Van Vossenhoff. I like him a lot. I like what he can do. There is, he's not exactly a young horse now, but I like what he can do. He's Leandro VG,
yeah,
or something like that. I like him. there is a really nice black stallion. I can't think of his name. It's something Hawk. I think he stands where Toulon was or is.
The aura. In Van Tienel.
Yeah. I'd have to Google it. I know. I can picture him.
Do you know what he's by?
Again, no. I don't. But there you are. It's not. I'm not watching his pedigree. I'm watching what he can do, and I like what he's okay. doing. Do you know? Another horse I find interesting is it. By Sarah Dick.
Yeah.
I think he's
staccato out of fine Sarah.
He's one to watch. I think.
Yeah.
Another very good mare. That mare was really good.
And Michael, we could list. List, yeah. list, like, you know,
anything springing to mind for you?
There's a young stallion in Belgium, Quando. He's a Canon Emerald.
Yeah.
No, and I was actually in contact with the owner the last 2 years. I didn't use him because I suppose the mayor's working playing ball and with the timings of the semen and stuff, some around the weekend and stuff. But, like, he just looks like he could be a horse for the big stuff if he's minded now. And I think he seems to be in a good production place. But just the line of sires, in addition to the line of mares, it's so good the whole way through. I find him very interesting. Then I suppose, like, we're very lucky in Ireland. A lot of the riders are bringing in some good young stallions and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose Kingston's one that just brings to mind for us. We've used him a bit, but. What kind of drew us to him as well, Kinsey, his sire, he's not readily available, and when we saw him in the flesh then, we said, Jesus, you know, he's a really nice modern style, so we use Kingston a bit.
He's Kingston, Dorkan Hero, like him a lot.
Yeah.
Fan of him, his type, his model, everything about him, I like him. I've used Calvador. He's a son of Confilo Plus, also stands with Joran Neal. Just like he has, he's a really.
Yeah, you like it.
You like him over a jump.
He saw him schooling in Kilkenny one of the days, and just
he's
like
just
very, very.
When you see him, you won't forget him. Like, he just has that way of jumping. He jumps and just, oof. He's one, like, I didn't even know what he was or who was riding him. I could see him in the distance, and I made it my way across to see what it was.
Yeah.
That's the kind of impression he made on me. I just thought he could do it, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, there's
and that's a fair few now.
Yeah.
I have one more hypothetical question for you. If you could have dinner with one living equestrian personality, anyone in the horse industry worldwide that's currently living, who would it be and why? Is the one, like, you've covered a bit of ground so far on different trips, stallion shows, farm visits. Is there one person who you would still really love to meet or get a chance to have dinner with or grab a coffee with and pick their brains? Or sell them a foal?
that's a very, very good question. I suppose there's so many people who kind of... You kind of don't know them, but you don't, like, you don't know them to sit down and,
you know, of them.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly, yeah.
And, like, you see them maybe and they're like, God, it'd be great to chat them, but who would I choose now? I suppose is the next, I suppose, maybe, I suppose not an obvious one, but the breeder George with Vander in Belgium, for me, because I never met him or encountered him, and just what he's achieved and done in breeding, and just to kind of get to learn from him, or even some sort of bit of knowledge from him, because he seems to be able to continuously produce young stallions that go on to be very, very, very prolific. And, like, you just like to see his thought process and the selection of the mares. Like I do know that, you know, he's doing embryos and stuff with good mares and stuff, but still he obviously has some vision, like, with the crosses he makes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The work, and I know he's access to some of the world's best mares as well because of his reputation as a top breeder, but he maximises that to his advantage, I suppose. Do you know, he's one I'd like to chat for a while.
Aidan, anyone springing to mind?
There's a few, Michael. But kind of from a different aspect. I think I'd like to sit down with maybe Scott Brash or Ben Maher. If it's a no holds barred kind of a conversation. And just get their perspective on what it takes to ride a horse at that level, to take home an Olympic gold or to win a big championship. What's their idea of breeding, what they think is needed to get that type of horse. Just, you know, it's easy in your own head to say, this is the cross, but you put that cross under a rider and they come back and say, oh well, he's short of his neck or he hasn't that bit of oomph or whatever. I think if you could marry up the two more, you could have more of a chance of...
Yeah, it's like the conversation we were having when we were going looking at the horses earlier.
Yeah.
That we as breeders, we need to engage with riders that are out there doing it.
Absolutely.
So much more, because with where we don't ride, we're often only seeing kind of half the picture, and they can just expand our minds in terms of what's demanded.
Absolutely.
Looking to the future now, and the years to come, how many foals are you expecting next season?
Between 10 and 12, I think.
I think it's, 12. We have 12 and we still have some, I think, 3 mares to check over the next week.
And
I suppose, we would probably sell a couple of mares.
Yeah,
you'd love to keep them all, but like, as I was saying to you kind of earlier, we realise the work that goes into producing between maybe 5 to 8.
Yeah.
Do you know, and it's pretty intensive, like just getting the mares back and forth and stuff. So rather than let it suffer, you know, it's better to settle 1 or 2, do you know? But,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
At first, I suppose we are lucky, like we keep up a fairly good relationship with the people we sell the mares to and stuff. So like, do you know, if there's ever a nice filly or that down the line, you know, we always say to people, look, sure, we'd definitely be interested.
Give it a chance,
because like you were saying to before, the idea behind us buying a mare is we're always buying it that if we don't, you know, if we keep it, it's going to be appealing to other people. So that's why you kind of have confidence selling them to people, and like that's why, like, I think people go away happy as well, because they know you're not selling because there's an issue with the mare, or you know, you sell it with the best of hope for the person buying it, that everything will go their way.
And you've bought it good enough for yourself.
Yes,
first of all,
that's the thing. So that's kind of one of the things. But I suppose the future, I suppose, will continue. I suppose we want to try and continue to build a name and just get known for having good foals and stuff, and to try and continuously improve. Like, I mean, it's great to be able to sit down with you and like even pick your brain, considering all the different top breeders around the world you've interviewed. And it's like, do you know, how do you try and even get to some of their stature or success? It's by being open to learning and open to improvement, and you know, keep taking new ideas on board, keep trying different things, keep following your gut sometimes, because like that's often the case, isn't it? Like, sometimes maybe something that maybe you're a bit iffy about, like on paper, it could work really well, you know, and it's just it's an instinct as well, I think. You know. You know, time will tell. You know, if we sit down again sometime in the future, I could say to you, God, I tried that, but it went disastrously wrong. But I could also say, God, it was the best choice we made. You know, so.
And have you a clear idea on like what your ultimate breeding goal is? If somebody said, right, what's the one thing that in the rest of your years breeding horses, what's the one thing that you hope to achieve?
Well, you know, I suppose like if we were sitting here this time last week or the week before, be saying, God, if you could get one that would be very successful on the national stage, or you know, to win a national championship type thing, be like, you know, the mind would be blown. And that's the way we're feeling, like. It's like,
yeah, I think it our the goals are coming in stages. Like, obviously you start when you start breeding a nice foal and you take it to a sale table, wouldn't it be lovely to top the sale? And maybe you're
tick.
You know, but you like maybe you do it,
yeah,
and that's great, and your foal goes to a good place, and it'll work or it won't. And if it does work, say, wouldn't it be lovely if they qualified for Dublin? And they do. And then you say, wouldn't it be lovely if they got a place? And then they do. So I think the two horses are selected for Lanaken.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be lovely if they got a medal?
You'll have to make sure you're not in Dun Stores that day.
No, but you know, it's...
Is your passport in date?
Yes. But
yeah,
it's,
no, but
it's
like,
a,
yeah,
like you know, it's in coming in stages.
You nearly dare to dream then, like
you
like,
dare to dream,
but,
exactly.
But like,
so we, now with Dublin behind you,
we
what's the like the highest?
But I suppose
the highest level ambition that you have
to actually
your homebreds.
To actually have a horse going like potentially going to one of the competitions in the World Breeding Championship, like because like that's a huge like that's huge for us.
Yeah,
that's massive. Like,
but I suppose like if you were
Dave,
kind of
Dave, sure, like can everyone love an Olympic medalist or. A top championship horse.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I mean, if
you know,
like if you could breed a horse that could compete on a world stage, like that would be
consistently would
be incredible. Like,
it's easy to say, oh, he jumped 160, but did he only jump one 160 fence in a 155 class? Do you know him?
Yeah,
but then like it'd be great to breed a 145 horse next.
Absolutely,
it'd be great to breed a 150 horse.
Just
do you mean like the. To see a foal reaching future potential, like, I mean, it's just incredible, like, to think that small animal that comes into the world, like, the possibilities are endless for them.
Hey,
if they go on the right path, like,
yeah.
So.
When you sell a foal.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's obviously, you say, right, God, I'd love to breed an Olympic champion, but, like, then being realistic, we'll just kind of bring it back. Well, how does he get to that stage? He has to go through the production process and, you know, meet good people along the way and,
so I'm going to have dinner with Scott Brash or I'm going to figure that out.
Yeah, but
or Keane O'Connor
like,
or Gara or any of the
yeah,
boys,
but,
a top rider.
Even,
like,
I suppose,
you know?
Like, I mean, for the 7-year-old that's with Susan Fitzpatrick, like, he's won 5, 6, and 7-year-old international classes.
Yeah.
And, like, you're like thinking, God, that, he's jumping international. Like, that's class. And, like, if he's just progressing another bit, like, he could be a 140, 145 horse. And then you're like, God, could he go on another bit? Like, and I suppose only time tells that. And, you know, the possibilities, like, it's just it's really exciting.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
and then
we
kind of cross the fingers then and hope the horse is sound for the people to have him and
exactly
it goes their way. You know,
we have sold foals where between us we'd have said, yeah, I think that guy could go somewhere, and we've never seen him again.
You know, and it's just
like, I'm just going to use her as an example because she's recent. Belladonna went to Sweden. Was it Sweden?
Yeah, like
we said.
Like we were
maybe we'll read about or see a placing on Hip on Mundo or something. We were sure that was the end of her journey in Ireland.
Yeah, we were delighted, like obviously the time to get a sale internationally, like
you know.
It was through Brendan Dyle. Brendan came up and he picked out a foal for client of his in Sweden and like we were like, oh, this is incredible stuff, do you know? And yeah, then she was brought back to Ireland, we're like that's
wow.
Unbelievable,
yeah.
Like, so,
you know, like
she's had a really good story, and then I suppose when Dennis bought Kahari, like he had been at the Cavan sale the night before, and the Connollys were up there with the grandmother Kahari, and he knew the family, and I had a foal for sale on the internet, and he phoned me and he called the next day and he bought him, you know, and that was the start of his journey with him, like, you know, so
it was, yeah,
it's really. Like when you actually reflect back on it, you know, the amount of people, time, effort involved, like it's incredible. Like
Dennis actually came then. To be fair, he came at the really right time. We had no foals sold or anything, so he had to pick.
Yeah,
and
he loved the filly as well. Actually,
he liked the filly, but I think he can correct me if I'm wrong. I think Kahari was the one for him.
Yeah, he loved the canter. It's a canter, and he just flew around the field, you know. So
I'm delighted.
It worked out great.
The progress he's made of him, and I hope it continues. He's almost always welcome back, anytime.
Especially if he's a horse boxer.
Yeah, no problem.
Looking in even in the short term, in the next 5 to 10 years, is there anything in particular that you'd like to achieve in that say next 5 to 10 year period?
I suppose like we're aiming kind of to improve the infrastructure. That's the if we could get that moving, that'd be a good say a good target. And I think it's achievable, like, and it's necessary if we want to stay producing horses. And then I suppose.
And Aidan's handy with the digger, isn't it?
Put my own digger, yeah.
Not bad, I suppose. Okay. I can slew it around in circles.
But I suppose in terms of the mare herd and stuff, then it's like, just say a couple of our mares that say are producing the jumping horses now.
We need to start keeping their daughters.
Yeah, we haven't considered the next generation for them. So thankfully, look, the mares are still quite young in breeding terms, and provided nothing happens, we'll definitely look at keeping a filly or two here or there to continue the lines, especially with the siblings or potential siblings being like kind of recognisable now, you know, because we're building up our own kind of, you know, it's grand, like it's great to buy mares and stuff from other people, and you know, like they've done the hard work, say, but then you have to make it, you have to put your stamp on it then, and try and create like your own brand with it, like, you know. So I suppose that's the importance of selective kind of trying to get pedigrees that are working, and especially if you're starting out breeding, or like you're looking at stepping back, say, well, is there anything we can be doing differently? But I think we kind of found our way slowly, but we're lucky enough we kind of realised that you needed them to be related to jumpers, you know, to have a hope of producing an athlete as well. So yeah, we're kind of, that'll be something we'll probably look more on, and then we're always exploring the idea of maybe should we purchase another family, like of established family and stuff. But then, do you want to try and do a bit more with your own as well? So it's kind of to get that balance, that will remain kind of current, obviously, with like the young stallions and stallions that are on trend. You'll have a product for people that's desirable, but you also want to have something you like yourself. You know, I think that's big for us as well. Let's say you didn't get a foal sold, like, you're kind of like, that's all right. Like, you know, I'm happy to have him there. I'm happy to have her there. You know, so that's, I suppose, the position we want to head for.
Yeah, I think maybe in the next 5 years it would be nice maybe to have one of our own under saddle for ourselves. It's something that I'd like to explore.
Yeah,
we've been talking about it, I suppose. Yeah, really. Like,
you know,
in the last, say, I suppose the last couple of foal crops, there's been a couple of very appealing foals on it, and they're the ones that will sell the quickest. And it's like, God, I wonder if we could keep them. How, like, you know, but then obviously there's so many variables with that. But
yeah,
it would be nice to pick out one every year or second year, and like to have that interest again in the actual sport. That you, where you'd be an owner, that'd be quite nice as well.
Yeah, to be, yeah,
you know.
And I guess with 5 to 10 a year, with a bit of luck, if they hit the ground and they're all alive and the legs pointing in the same direction, it should leave you in a position where you can get the few sold, cover your costs, and you're nearly then holding your choice for free. Then,
yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, I suppose. You know, that'd be. That'd be the ideal situation.
That'd be the ideal situation, yeah.
And you'll have your arena built at that stage, and
all those things would complement each other if they worked, you know. And that, like, because with previous experience keeping young stock, we were quite fortunate. Like, we rated an incident or anything, but they love to find trouble, young stock. So that's the safer the facility, the better the chance you have of getting them to the production stage, where someone can sit up in their backs and stuff. So that's kind of, I suppose, why we're kind of leaning towards maybe infrastructure as our next target.
Before I ask my last question, the Irish Breeders Classic foal sale takes place this weekend, and as you mentioned earlier on, your much loved Senate, and one of the stallions you were delighted to use is Kelholm de Hoos, and you have Lot number six, we might as well give a plug to him.
Yeah.
Lot number six in the Irish Breeders Classic Foal Sale at Barnadown this weekend is CBI What a Man.
What a Man.
So remember that name, Mikel Holm de Hoos out of Senate. On the foal sales, you've had, I don't like using the term luck, because I think in a lot of instances you make your own. These things haven't happened by chance, but you've had a lot of success, is probably a better way of putting it, in the foal sales in Ireland, be that the Irish Breeders Classic or in more recent years the Mayo Roscommon foal sale. You topped the sale last year. When you're looking at your crop of foals in a given year, what factors go into deciding, right, that's a foal for this sale, or that's a foal for this sale? Well, what do you feel makes, and I know sometimes you can go down thinking you have a super foal and not get selected.
Absolutely.
That can happen too.
It has happened to us.
That's part of it, unfortunately. Yeah, but
like, what are you looking for in the package to go, right, that foal has a good chance of getting selected in sale A, B or C?
That's a good question. I suppose in terms of the way we look at it, we kind of sit down and we look, sometimes it depends on the age of the foal. Now, the qualities there, people kind of tend to kind of understand that, and they'll be okay, they'll know the foal. Like, people are used to buying foals, they'll be happy, they'll be confident to buy them at a younger age. But I suppose the current batch of mares, they're all reasonably well related. You know, there's a performer, but I suppose the Breeders' Classic, kind of, that's looking at foals more by international tires, with mares kind of that are fairly current and fairly well related up close.
Okay.
So that's, like, I suppose Senate goes there. Then we had a Calestis mare last year. Her brother jumps World Cup. So, like, that's kind of, you're trying to get into that bracket there, like, for it to be appealing to maybe more of a European audience as well as an Irish audience.
Okay.
That's kind of what we'd be looking at for that sale. But I suppose we're quite lucky this year now. Most of the foals could kind of to be able to
hold their own
in any of them, you know. And I suppose it comes down to, you know, you'd love to bring a couple, but then it's like you're up in the expense and you have to get someone to help you out bringing the second one for the viewing days and stuff. So it's to bring one you'd be confident of maybe getting in.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose we have a couple of nice
we've bought
Air Jordan foals this year.
Yeah, a really nice one. We brought
one to the Mayo Roscommon viewing day, and we're lucky enough to get in. And we brought, actually, the one going to the Mayo Roscommon sale is sibling to Gahari. He's a nice black foal. And then we brought another one to Cavan, and
he's just selected too.
So we could have brought either of them to either viewing day. Do you know?
Yeah,
there was no real reason why one was the other. Do you know?
Two other foals in the Mayo Roscommon.
Yeah, we've a nice
sale as well.
Nice Hosto filly over for Fashion Mare. She that's a horse that's with Niall Andrew Hughes, nice horse now. And then we have
a Kingston filly.
Kingston, very nice Kingston filly.
Cruising sister of
Heracross. Jump 160 with
she's nice, I like her now.
So they're going to go to that. And then sure, the other foals, then we've another Kelham. He's over Chinch and Demont Mare. He was a little bit young for the viewing days, but he's coming together really nice, and I like him a lot. We have a very nice Rock and Roll foal, actually. I forgot to mention Rock and Roll.
That's from the family of Belladonna, actually.
Belladonna, the mare, she's a sister to the mother of Belladonna, so that's a nice foal now. He's another nice young stallion we used. Sherlyn Greig of him over in Turles there.
And then, the baby foal, then the Choco Blue 2.
Yeah, we've a Choco Blue 2 foal in from a Calestis mare. So he was born there in July, so he was a little bit young to go to the viewing day. So, but all in all, we're very lucky this year with the run of foals. So that's making a long winded answer to your question.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a natural kind of feeling, isn't it? We literally just say, kind of, we're trying to pick. I suppose we've been lucky enough to be in the Breeders' Classic sale a couple of years. We weren't in it the first year, I think, but then Victory was sold in it the second year. So, he's a fairly successful graduate of the sale. So,
there's been a few years we got in and a few years we didn't, we, you know, so we kind of know what's needed for there. Like,
well, you'd like to think you have an idea.
Yeah, like a good, like a, I mean, the Kyle Hamm's a good moving forward, you know, and he looks nice.
Yeah, and I suppose with the likes of Senneth, it does help that Victory has been flying at the last few seasons, was a graduate of the Sale. Senneth has had a few in the Sale, and the fact that she's going back with the Kyle Hamm de Hoos, it's probably one of the best times to have a Kyle Hamm de Hoos after the Olympics.
Yeah, and then, like, I suppose the Cavan Sale, then we haven't been in that in a couple of years now, but we just felt he was a nice fold for it, you know. And Air Jordan's a quite popular sale in Ireland, the producers and that, they tend to like them, so we just thought he might be appealing there, because a good lot of show jumping riders to be up there that night and stuff. So
nice mare line going back to the Corey Fiovolo, is it?
Yeah, or Speezy Madness. Nice line.
Yeah.
And then I suppose, like, the Mayor's Common breeder sale, that's like, the credit has to go to those guys. They're a great group of guys. They're going around the country for the viewing days and stuff. And I suppose the first year or two, we didn't really have anything for it. It was just, we were lucky enough we had a few folds sold at home and that. But last year now, we had one in it for ourselves and a friend.
And we had another selected.
We had a great day out, and we had another one actually selected. And of course, the unfortunate thing having folds, he was injured the morning of the sale. So that's another thing. Yeah, no, full credit to them boys for providing breeders like ourselves with another platform. You know,
it's a huge effort, in fairness to them.
Yeah, and I guess what's nice, the lads put a lot of work into it, the breeders themselves. So
exactly.
There may be more understanding of what goes in. But I think what's particularly nice is having five selection days around the country?
It
makes it incredibly accessible to anybody with a nice fold, because it's hard, like, as you know, like, you're trying to run full-time jobs, 10 plus mares, and what is it, five kids between you under the age of six?
Another one on the way here in the US.
It's very hard. It's not always suitable to get up to a particular venue for one particular day, but I actually like what they've done spreading the selection days around the country. It's made it very accessible to everybody, and it's also made it accessible to the kind of, to maybe the breeder who's earlier on in their breeding.
And you know, actually, even this year, like, I mean, they're always striving to improve, and like this year they get feedback sheets on all the folds. I don't know if you knew that, but
yeah,
I mean, very insightful, you know. And
yeah, it was really good, actually.
Just, you know, like, you know the way, because
to get it's very transparent. Yeah, no, whether you got selected or didn't get selected,
you can have your own idea, or you think you have a super fold, you think you have an ordinary fold, but to get somebody else's perspective on the fold, like, I enjoy that, whether it be good or bad. It's eye opening.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
So.
And obviously, like, I mean, it's opinions, people can disagree with
them.
Yeah.
It
can be difficult judging on a day too, do you know? But sometimes the folds mightn't travel as well as you'd like, or they could be a little bit sick, or do you know? So
even the sale last year was the perfect example. You got a foal selected, you got him all the way to the sale, and when he came out,
whenever he
came out of the box, he was just, he gave himself a bit of a knock, and you've done all the work.
That
final hurdle.
We're very lucky to be able to get him into the ring, actually.
We were very lucky we got him inside then in Marriott Hall. Our father was devastated. He wanted to bring him home.
Yeah, because, like,
we don't do that. Like, we wouldn't go somewhere with something if it's not right.
Try and have him as right as you can, and that's it. They don't hope for the best, but actually, I forgot that.
Actually, he was having a heated debate.
Yeah, because he could have nearly had the tube gone that day.
Having a very heated debate at the back of a horse box in the car park in Glenamaddy. But thankfully, we got our way, and Damien Griffin bought him.
Yeah, again, he got to a good home again.
Fingers,
a good chance.
That always helps.
Yeah,
fingers crossed, he says lucky for him. You know, so.
And finally, the question that I finish each interview with now, so it shouldn't be a surprise to you if you listened to any previous interviews. What advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone starting off in their breeding career?
That's a very good question.
I'll buy you a few seconds here. You can change it around a different bit. If you were to look back on the last 10 years, or if you were to restart your breeding program again, what things would you do the same, and what things would you change? What do you think has worked well for you that could work well for other breeders? So you can go either way with that. You can give a general advice to young breeders, or you can take it from the point of view of what's worked well for you over the past 10 to 12 years, or what you would change if you were restarting again.
I suppose my advice would be, something I've probably said to different guys around me different times, if you don't have a very big budget, maybe just take your time and maybe try and save up a bit more and buy something you really like. And I know everyone's opinion of what they'll really like is going to be different, which is, that's brilliant as well, because that's why there's so many different horses in the world.
Yeah.
But take your time and do your research. Now, and I know it's easy to say do your research, because we're used to looking at computers and that, but I suppose to try and come to someone that's willing to help you, and just show you the database and stuff, and kind of let you know what you should be looking for in terms of maybe a horse that's related, or maybe some approved stallions from the line, or just something to kind of indicate general soundness and maybe longevity in the career, do you know? Because the mares, I know there's people have varying opinions on sport mares and brood mares, but the mare is a very important job to do. She has to carry a foal, you know, for the full period of time. Then she has the responsibility of foaling it down safely. So you're looking for a good feet, a good solid model, and obviously her anatomy. You want that to be kind of, look, there's always exceptions to rules, but you want that to be of reasonably good standard, you know. And I suppose when I was younger, I used to be reading a lot of, articles, and a lot of them would be from breeders you've interviewed and stuff. And one that stuck in my mind, I'm not sure which one said it now, I'll probably find it later, but you're better to buy a poorer mare from a good family.
Younger,
that's who it was. Than a really good mare from a poor family.
Yeah.
So I thought that was at the time it was very interesting. It's like, what does he mean by that? But then as you kind of go around to sales and stuff, and you could see some incredibly bred mares in terms of their sire line, but they mightn't be related to anything. And that can be a common trend. Guys would send you passports of mares, and the sire line could be phenomenal, but then you go looking for some sort of performance from the dam line and it's non-existent. So another guy, actually, I visited him, you know him as well, you interviewed him, Quality Stud Cohen.
Yeah.
And he was showing me all the different mares he had, and at the time we were just beginning, weren't we?
That's right, yeah.
And I came home to Aidan, and I was telling him, I was like, God, he had Sisters of Arco and
relations, Family Casale, and
mind blowing stuff at the time, and top mares. And he showed me this mare, I can't remember the breed number. And to me, she was a really lovely mare, and she was by a really good stallion. And I said, what's the story with the mare? Is she for sale? He said, for breeding, no. But for sport, no problem. And I said, why not? And he goes, for breeding, this mare has no family. But for sport, she's fine, because she's an athlete, and someday she could have a family.
Yeah.
But for you to start breeding, you want to start with something that's established, because it's too hard work and too expensive to make a mare. I thought that was good advice, and it kind of stuck with me. No matter what we'd be looking for, we try and have some sort of reference point where it's related, be it 135 up to 160. I know there's a big difference.
Yeah.
But it indicates performance, and then it comes down to the budget and what. So you have to start somewhere. If you want to start breeding, you have to start with some mare. So you try and get the best mare you can. And that's oftentimes very hard. And you know yourself, when you go looking for mares, the better ones are pricey.
Yeah.
But then, do you take your time? Do you save up? Do you buy one of those? Depends on your circumstances and how quick you want to get going. But yeah, I do try and advise people, take your time. Maybe just take that bit of time, build up a bit more money, and then buy what you really want, as opposed to something that's just okay for you.
Yeah. Aidan, anything to add or take away?
I think Ray can hit on a good bit of it there. I said it earlier, and I'm going to say it again, I think it's so important to surround yourself with a good network of people. I can't say enough about that, Take your time when you're selecting a mare, and don't settle for the one that's available for less than their budget just because she's less than their budget.
Yeah, and I suppose then you when you said about would we do anything differently, like that's a really good question, and you always have hindsight, it's a great thing, but I suppose if we did things differently, then we might be sitting here with you and we mightn't have had the success of the RDS, you know. So to say everything in life happens for a reason, like you take what you're dealt and you move on, then things don't go your way. So I think that's the way we operate, you know. We try and do things the best we can. Some things will work out great, some things won't, and you just have to move forward, keep trying,
keep striving forward. Yeah,
and you will be faced with challenges, you will be faced with lots of tough days, and that's
the only certainty.
That's the that, I was just going to say that
you're going to get a hammer,
and that's the guarantee for any young breeder, any new breeder, that's the guarantee. But yeah, like I mean, there is some great guys in the industry, and some of them are really, really helpful and more than willing to share information. So don't be afraid to go out and look for it and ask the question.
Ask the question.
Don't think you know everything. None of us know everything. We're always learning. Every day we're learning. You know what I mean? And like that's how you improve, or try to keep improving. No one will know everything the first day.
That's actually crucial. And even what I was saying, the guy that we'd all known that who met you, he was actually saying back in 2013 at Sir Toganbosch at the Stallion Approvals, it was David Hickey, and he had met you, and he said it was brilliant then even just to see how you operated back then. And you were only at the start of your breeding program, but just that you had something to you, like how, I suppose, how you're consuming the information, like how you were going about your business then and the plans that you had was great. But actually even flipping it back to David is an interesting one. Or, you know, don't be afraid to ask that question. David was in the Tipperary knowledge transfer group. And other people in the group, sometimes they'd be reluctant to ask the question that was on their mind. And some of them have said to me, David would always ask the question that we were all thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
But because he took the plunge to ask the question, it would open up conversation.
Of course, it was benefiting a lot more people.
Otherwise, you know, you're all going home with the question. And sometimes I think we're awful afraid to ask a question that might seem basic or stupid, but there's nothing worse than going home with an unanswered question.
That's a really good. I remember actually I went to a conference one day, and I was new to a role, and CPD was written on the sheet. I'd never heard of CPD in my life. I was like, oh my god, like, and this woman's the girl giving the talk, she started talking about CPD. And there's a group of ladies at the table with me, like, and I just leaned over and I asked them, I said, girls, what does CPD mean? And none of them knew. And I was like, this is really good. And so I said, sorry, I said, what does CPD stand for? She was like, oh, it's continued personal development. I was like, thanks very much. And the girls beside me were all delighted.
Yeah.
So I went from feeling like, oh my god, I'm lost here, to actually kind of, you take control. You kind of have to ask the question sometimes, because like we leave a lot of things to chance and to nature in breeding, but some of the questions, there is answers if you're willing to ask the question. And I suppose you're the same as us. You've encountered lots of people who are willing to give that freely, and that's, you know, that's the important part. So yeah, just keep that in mind all the time.